Hello and welcome to Wild Disabled. My name's Simon Sansom, presenter of Wild Disabled, and today I've got, believe it or not, a one-handed pianist player, classical piano player, Nicholas McCarthy.
Hello. And that is quite the title, isn't it? One-handed piano player. I know.
I mean, you know, I'm going to take some pictures, I'm going to do a video, I'm going to stick them online. Okay. I'm just thinking of when you went to your parents.
Yes.
And you said, I tell you what, Mum, I've only got one hand, but I want to play the piano. I mean, did she think that's a good idea, or did she just laugh in your face and actually thought you were actually joking at the time?
Well, certainly didn't laugh in my face because, you know, bless her, she just isn't that like that. I mean, I probably would have giggled if it was my disabled child, but she was far, far, far more PC than that than I am. And she very much said, okay, darling, well, you know, what do we do next? Because, you know, my parents are non-musicians.
Yeah.
And then they bought me a keyboard and I just started experimenting myself. And the moment where they realised that I was good is, because I used to listen to Classic FM a lot, because I at the age of 14, came to the piano and came to music and knew nothing about classical music whatsoever. So because I was like a thirsty sponge waiting to hear all of what I could hear in the classical music world, I thought, what better way to listen to that than Classic FM. So I used to listen to Classic FM a lot, and one day my dad shouted up the stairs and said, Nick, turn the radio down, and it wasn't the radio, it was me practising.
Oh, awesome.
And so I shouted back down the stairs, you know, and I said, it's not the radio, Dad, it's me. And there was deathly silence from downstairs, and the next minute my mum and dad came upstairs to my bedroom and were like, Nick, do you want piano lessons? Shall we get you piano lessons? And of course the answer was yes, and that's kind of how it started.
Yeah, okay. Because that's very supportive. Because,
yeah.
I mean, it's like me. I mean, I can't walk. And saying, I want to be a professional footballer.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen.
No.
And one of the statistics which I found, which I've read about quite a lot, is in the 130-year history of the Royal College of London for Music.
Royal College of Music, yeah.
Royal College of Music. You're the only one to graduate with one hand and slash one arm.
Which is lovely, and it's a lovely accolade to have. But my point, and when the press picked up on that when I graduated, it really was a lovely day, and it was nice, obviously, you know, being in all the national papers for my graduation, and that was an extra special moment to be recognised in that way. But it was also a little bit of a sadness, because I felt, why was I the only one in 130 years? You know, why am I not the fifth one-armed pianist to graduate from? Do you see my sentiment?
Yeah.
So it was a kind of bittersweet moment for me. But since then, you know, it's been great, because the amount of people who have now... And you know, they've credited me and me inspiring them to not be afraid to audition to the likes of the Royal College of Music or all of the conservatoires around the UK. So there's a few left-hand pianists now who are studying, and I'm very proud to have been maybe part of that flagship kind of one to do it first.
Have you ever thought about getting a prosthetic?
I used to wear a prosthetic.
Okay.
Yeah.
And like try and cheat.
And try and program it somehow to play Tchaikovsky beautifully. I used to wear a prosthetic. I had a prosthetic limb all the way through my schooling, so through infant school, through junior school, and really it just sat on my teacher's shelf. And so when Ofsted would come in and do a report on the school or something, there'd be this limb sat on my teacher's shelf, and they would be, you know, what's this? And my teacher would have to say, oh, we've got, you know, each other. And I just didn't like wearing it, you know, I didn't like wearing it.
I can reflect on that, because I've got one for my leg.
Yeah.
And it's
uncomfortable.
They're uncomfortable to wear. I can't put it on by myself. I need assistance.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not nice.
It's not nice. And they're uncomfortable. And for me as well, having been born without my right hand, I do so much with my right arm, with the stump that I'm left with. Mm. So, you know, I can go up to the bar and carry as many drinks as a two-handed person could do. Mm. But I can't do that with a prosthetic.
Yeah.
It almost hinders me. It almost disables me more, I found, having prosthetic limb. And then so moving on, I then wore my prosthetic throughout my secondary schooling. So through all of secondary school, I wore it every single day.
Yeah.
More so because it was a new school, and you know, when you go to secondary school you have to wear a blazer, and so I thought, you know, more the symmetry of it. And I kind of regret doing it, really, because it kind of, once you started wearing a prosthetic limb, you've kind of got to be a bit consistent.
Mm.
And that was not me through my infants and junior schooling. I was a bit like, one day I'd have it on, the next minute it'd be on the shelf, and I wouldn't wear it for 2 months. So when I then went on to do my A-levels, I then consciously decided, no, I'm not wearing a prosthetic anymore. This is me. And by that point, I'd kind of started to become known in the industry and thing. And obviously, the one-armed pianist.
Well, known in the industry, I think, is an understatement. Okay. As everyone knows, for Wild Disabled, we do a lot of research. mainly me, going on the internet, and just looking you up. So, 2012, you've just graduated.
Yeah.
And was it your first job?
Yeah.
Your first job. Now, this is a big job.
Yeah.
This is playing at the Paralympics closing ceremony
yeah.
with Coldplay.
Yes.
And Chris Martin and Co.
Yeah, and the British Para Orchestra, which was just fantastic.
So I mean, that's a really good internship.
I mean, that really did... I mean, you couldn't have written it, really, and I couldn't have, you know, hoped for a better timeline of events. You graduated from the Royal College of Music, you know, all the press went mad because they picked up on the fact that I'd made history there. And then 2 weeks later, a matter of weeks later, to be in front of 86,000 people along Superband Coldplay.
And a couple of billion people watching as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It certainly launched my career with a bang. People didn't know, you know, only industry people really knew who I was prior to that, because I'd done various different bits of telly and stuff like that. But that worldwide stage and all of the press that I did around that to promote the Para Orchestra and my work with them, and obviously to promote the Coldplay, and everyone wanted to hear about it. So, you know, for me, I was the one who was then asked to go on Alan Titchmarsh's ITV daytime show the day after the Paralympics to talk about my experience the night before, and all of these things, which really made my name get bigger than it was at the time. And that really did launch that. So from there, I got booked on to several international tours as a solo artist,
yeah.
and my career really just grew from that moment. So I do attribute that to be the
so
kind of
you're doing quite well at the moment.
I do all right.
You
I
do all right. Right. Okay, yeah. Okay, your schooling experience.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be a pianist.
Yeah.
What happened when you applied to schools or music colleges? Because if you've only got one arm, they're probably not going to take you seriously.
But then also probably not looking for me to take on. No. So I started off, because bear in mind, I had no musical interest throughout my entire schooling life up until I was 14. Mm. So, you know, I was just a normal childhood up until that point. And then at 14, I saw my friend playing a Beethoven piano sonata in my school assembly and just fell in love with everything to do with the piano, with music. And I just was so drawn to these wonderful instruments. She went to a specialist piano school in Croydon, which I'm from Epsom in Surrey, so it's not far. And this very high standard piano school was held on Saturdays in Croydon. My friend went there, and I'd been to see her in concert at these schools on a Saturday. So I felt in my head this was a really nice narrative, you know, a nice way for me to get into the school, for me to go to the school where I already know my friend who was there. And anyway, I decided to ring up the headmistress of this music school and asked to audition for her. And as I mentioned, you know, it's very high standard. And she said on the phone to me straight away, she really slammed the door in my face before it was even open. And she said, you know, how could I possibly play scales with two hands? I said, well, I don't have two hands, so I can't play scales with two hands, but I can play scales with my left hand. And she said, oh, I'm really sorry, I haven't got time to see you. And she hung up the phone on me. And that was my first kind of door slamming in my face firmly. And it was really hard. It really was. It was really difficult. I was really upset. Because I kind of felt, and you know what it's like when you're a 14-year-old, we kind of feel in life that we've got one road, you know, one path leads to Rome. Whereas actually, I believe, you know, all paths lead to Rome, that kind of motto.
So from being turned away from a school,
yeah.
You've played at the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah.
Did you ever call her up and go, you know, this is where I am?
Well,
just to brag
slightly. It wasn't intentional, but yeah. What happened was, and it was a bit more public than that, unfortunately, and like I say, it wasn't intentional.
Was it like a school reunion or something?
No, it was the Daily Mail. So the Daily Mail,
when you say the Daily Mail, it's going to get worse.
I know, exactly.
Yeah, they kind of...
Well, I'd say that it was a lovely thing. One of my first kind of public features that I did, which was way before 2010, was the Daily Mail picked up on my story. So they did, on a Saturday, a huge big double page feature on me, lots of photos, big, you know, nice, lovely double page feature. And really nice, for Daily Mail standards, it was really good. And but in that, and it was my first professional interview, as you know, the first interview I'd done with a journal.
Yeah.
They were asking me, like you're asking me now, you know, questions, and I'm an open book. So I honestly answered.
So I'm a teacher.
And also, told her name, which I probably, you know, in hindsight, I wouldn't do.
Oh, bless her.
Well, it was printed, obviously, and then from that...
She was not best. I'm guessing she was not happy.
Well, from that and that story, then, you know, the next day, this morning on ITV, rang me, so I was then a featured guest on their show, and it kind of got bigger and bigger and bigger, so this kind of exclusive story that I gave kind of got bigger than it was, and I kind of felt bad because it wasn't intentional, and it did make her come across probably worse than it was. The fact is, she was just quite a closed-minded person, and she was of an older age, and I think that had something to do with it. So, you know, really, I actually thank her now for not believing in me, because it was that really pushed me to go to better me. I then went to the Junior Guildhall in London, as opposed to this one in Croydon.
You're actually quite young. You're younger than
Thanks,
me.
Thanks, Simon.
Yeah. I'm
plummeting towards my 30th birthday.
Exactly. You know, you're 29 years old.
Yeah.
You're doing quite well. Now, I've listened to interviews with Gary Barlow, Robbie Williams, Kylie Minogue, and their dream, which they have done now, is to play at the Royal Albert Hall.
Mm.
But they had to wait till like mid-30s, 40s, or when they've sold 100 million records.
Yeah.
You've done it when you were 20...
24, I think.
24,
yeah.
I mean, how does that compute for a 24-year-old that you're playing at the Royal Albert Hall?
Well, it wasn't so much just the playing, because it was actually my TED Talk. That was the first thing I did. So it was actually me speaking and playing. So it was slightly different. So it almost felt more like a one-man show almost.
You can actually watch us on YouTube as well. The videos there, I watched it.
Yeah. That was amazing. Because I do so much motivational speaking, it really is half my job, really, is motivational speaking, and the other half is performing in concerts. And so that really put me on the map on the speaking circuit, where beforehand, maybe even though I was doing it, maybe people weren't as aware that I was giving motivation talks. So yeah, since then, obviously that's a big partner, and Ted has invited me back. I did another one in Vienna.
Where do you go from the Royal Albert Hall? That's the question.
Well, there's bigger venues than Royal Albert. I mean, the Royal Albert Hall is really special. Yeah. I mean, for me, who studied right opposite it at the Royal College of Music, it was always that, you know, when I was practicing long hours and I would be tired, and I'd look out the window and I'd look at the Royal Albert Hall and think, this is why I'm practicing this amount, is because that one day I'm going to be there. Little did I know I would be there in just a matter of years after graduating. But it's a very special place, and they've been great to me over the years as a venue.
You also create music. You released an album.
Mm-hmm.
Did quite well.
Did?
Yeah. Are you releasing any more albums?
Well, I've released two. So my first one, which I did when I got I signed a record deal with Warner Music.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. It did very well. And I then decided what I didn't like, I've always done things on my own terms.
Mm-hmm.
And when you sign with a label, there's certain things which you have to do, and you're kind of their property.
Mm.
And I didn't like that at all.
Mm.
So despite the album doing well, I was very keen not to replay that first album situation. So I released my second album on my own label, which did just as well. I was really pleased and really honoured that people supported it just as much as they did with the big record label one. So I was really pleased with that. So I'm not releasing an album this year, but I am thinking about it next year.
Because
I think, you know, I did think, should I release it this year because I'm 30, but I thought, you know what, I'm not going to. I'm going to do it.
Get it right.
I know kind of roughly what I want to play on it, and
it might take you half time. You've only got one hand.
Exactly. Oh, boom, 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 boom. Exactly.
Yeah. Your film at Prince Charlie.
Yes.
Future King of England.
I would say this is probably one of my proudest moments, and I know for my parents it was a hugely proud moment. So this was only in March in 2018, and I got a letter from the Royal College saying that they've decided to make me an honorary member of the Royal College of Music, and that means, you know, Prince Charlie, my dear friend Charlie, has to present me with this award. It was just a really, really, really special day.
It's a really nice photo online of it as well. You know, if you Google you and Prince Charlie, it comes up straight away.
It does come
in
up.
Your robes,
yeah.
And, you know, standing with the future King of England. So you've done the Paralympics with Coldplay, you've done Prince Charlie, you've done the Royal Albert Hall, you've released a couple of albums and done quite well. You know, you're doing quite well for yourself.
Well, it's not going bad. I mean, you know, I eat. I've got a house over my head, you know. Well, I'm doing all right.
Let's talk about your disability.
Yes.
You've got no arm.
I have no arm.
Okay. Do you from what I can see, now you're wearing a jacket for this purpose.
Yes.
Have you got like half an arm or anything?
Yeah, so I've got it just below. So I've got my elbow.
Okay.
And then it stops probably about 3 inches away. So basically I've missing my hand, my wrist, and most of my forearm.
Okay.
And then I've got my elbow still.
Is it true, now I'm not too sure on this, you have to correct me if this is wrong, is it true there is no current medical known situation for it or no name for it?
Well, in my case, no, because it wasn't diagnosed until I was born. Okay. My mum and dad were like, oh, my firstborn son, where's his arm? For me, yes, nothing was diagnosed. You know, it didn't show up on my mum's scans throughout her whole pregnancy. I was obviously hiding it very well while I was in her tummy. And so they couldn't diagnose anything retrospectively because it had happened by that point. And, you know, they gave a few options. They said it could have been my umbilical cord got caught round and stopped blood flow. They also said it could have been an amniotic band got caught round. But they were plucking ideas out of thin air. You know,
they didn't know what was wrong with me.
And also, by that point, like, my mum and dad couldn't care less. It didn't change anything.
No.
My health thankfully wasn't compromised by it. I just had one less limb.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think you're right. I don't think there is an umbrella term or a diagnosis.
I'm just wondering, when I was at school, I was forced to play sports, which I didn't like.
Mm.
And I'm just wondering, was that the same situation for you?
Well, I've always had, yes.
Because goalkeeper's not the best position for you.
Not the best position for me at all, I would say. I wouldn't be the best goalie.
No.
You know what? It wasn't even the fact that I had a disability. I was very overweight as a child, very overweight. Mm. And
you should see me. For people who are listening to this, I'm 6 foot and 20 foot stone, but I used to play rugby, so
yeah,
I know.
You're right. No, I was very overweight as a child, and that was really the reason I didn't want to play sport. I'm not a naturally sporty person anyway. I don't like watching it. I've got no interest in it at all.
Oh man, after my own heart.
So for me to then, you know, like, I mean, sports day and stuff, that just fills me with dread and anxiety. So what I very, especially in secondary school, what I used to start doing is, like, on cross country, for instance, me and my friend Sophie, we would do cross country, take the path off to the right, which takes me into Banstead High Street, where I could just go to M&S and have my lunch. That's all I used to do.
I hate sports except for rugby. Running, boring, can't do it. You know, football,
Whereas now, I'm a really good runner now, and I enjoy running because I've obviously lost a lot of weight. But before then, I just couldn't do it. You know, fitness-wise, it just wasn't there.
Yeah.
And I just hated everything to do with sport. And what made me laugh in secondary school, I think I went to about probably 4 PE lessons throughout my entire secondary schooling.
Yeah.
But every year I used to get a fabulous report for PE. And it was only until I was like year 9 or year 10, I said to my mum and dad, Mum, I'm going to be honest, you do know I've never been to PE. I've been there like 4 times, probably in year 7, and that was the last time I went.
Did they take sympathy on you?
Well, I just think they just knew it. I mean, I clearly wasn't going to, you know, I was huge. I clearly wasn't going to be the next sports person of the year. So I think they just allowed me just not to do it.
When I've interviewed a lot of people with disabilities, a lot of people think that being a Paralympian is the way to go.
Mm.
Okay. You've not, I've clearly not gone that route. But when I became disabled, I got saying, look, I could do archery, I could do shooting, I can do anything sitting down. Did you ever get that from your school or your parents?
No, not at all. No, nothing. There was no encouragement. I mean, they could see I wasn't sporty and it wasn't going to be something I was in. And even now, you know, I'm just not interested in sports. And obviously, for me, creativity is that I was always more artistic, more musically oriented. Even though I didn't play the piano as a youngster until 14, I was always very much more on the creative side of things. So I think definitely, but I do agree with you. I think nowadays it's very much like, oh, you're disabled, right? This is the route you go.
Yeah.
And I think
they back kind of point you in that direction.
Yeah. But whereas if you think, you know, 20 years ago and 25 years ago, it just wasn't like that.
Yeah. Then. Right, now, for people who listen to Wild Disabled, we have 10 questions, 10 personal questions, which I've researched around you.
Okay.
Some of them are straightforward, some of them are not.
Okay.
Okay, we'll see how we get on. Favourite tune?
Favourite tune?
Yeah.
As in song?
Well, we're thinking piano tune for this.
Oh, piano tune.
Yeah. What do you like playing the most?
I really like playing Rachmaninoff's Prelude in G minor, which you saw me play, actually. It's the second piece I played at.
The really fast one
that you played at the concert.
I'll just explain that.
Yes.
When I first met Nicholas a few months ago at a church concert in London, you were there for Supporting Scope.
Supporting Scope,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And this is when we agreed to do the interview, which is awesome. You were fantastic.
Thank you.
Almost a standing ovation.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, thank you. So it's my own arrangement. I'm really proud of it. And it's a piece of music. It's originally for two hands. And I always used to be so jealous of my contemporaries at the Royal College of Music who would play this original two-handed piece. And then it was last year when I recorded my album Echoes last year that I decided, you know what, I'm going to try and arrange this. And actually, it's my best arrangement I've ever done. I mean, it's very successful in its writing, which I'm really, really, really pleased about.
I think we need to explain that as well, because you do play one-handed as well, you have to rearrange the song?
Well, I don't have to. I mean, there's 3,000 original works for Left Hand Alone, dating back from the 19th century. So there's a huge wealth of repertoire which I don't need to touch. That's already written for Left Hand Alone. I have to just play and do nothing to. Commercially, for recordings and albums in our current ears, I have decided over the past few albums to include a few pieces which are maybe more familiar to people who listen to classical music. So I'll arrange pieces which they would have heard a two-handed pianist play, and I've arranged certain pieces for that. But that's more to please audiences and to please, to tick a few boxes there.
Favourite Coldplay song?
Strawberry Swing, the one we performed with them. I was in Co-op the other day, and Strawberry Swing by Coldplay came on, and I got a couple of tears in my eyes, I'm not going to lie. It just obviously conjures back so many fabulous memories.
Did you get any souvenirs from them?
No, my one souvenir, and it's not a souvenir, it's a memory. Because the Paralympic Games went right up to the day of the closing ceremony, you couldn't rehearse until the day in the stadium.
Okay.
So all of the stars, Rihanna, Coldplay, Nicholas McCarthy, we were all
drop your name.
We were all made to rehearse over in Dagenham at the old Ford factory in Dagenham, and so we were all out there, and we were rehearsing. And because I'd been playing this piece with the Parrot Orchestra for so long, I memorised the words to Strawberry Swing. So there's me, Chris Martin, and everyone. We're all performing in the rehearsal. And he obviously sees me at the piano, and I'm singing along, so he got quite excited by the fact I knew the words. So the next minute, he came down and sat next to me on my piano stool, told me to budge up a little bit, and we duetted Strawberry Swing together at the thing.
Oh.
And that was really, that was a moment. That's like my souvenir.
You get your number and go, can I come and play again with you?
Yeah, I'm like, hi, do you want me to support you on your tours? Yeah, it was, and he's just such a, everyone says it about him, and I echo it. He's just such a down-to-earth guy, his superstardom really hasn't affected him in the slightest, and he's just a normal, nice guy.
Cool.
So Strawberry Swing, definitely my favourite tune.
Okay. Favourite modern day performer on the piano?
Classical or...
Well, which you tell me.
I really, really love the Georgian pianist Katia Bunatishvili.
Okay.
She's really fabulous. She's really, piano superstar. So she's on the classical side, I really like. She obviously doesn't play piano, but she always has piano in her songs. Yeah. Is Adele. I love, so that would be like my modern, kind of contemporary, and then my classical would be Katia Bunatishvili.
Now, is it true? You've also been asked to perform on Britain's Got Talent about a dozen times.
Oh, constantly. I get asked every single year.
Okay.
Back in the day, years ago, when they first asked me, maybe I should have said yes to it back then. I didn't. I turned it down because I was already carving a name for myself without the tag Britain's Got Talent attached to me forever. So that's why I chose not to do it. Since then, they ask me every year, and it's because they need to guarantee a good show. So they always scout for talent, and that's fine. For me personally, I think it would be a bit silly now. I've signed a record deal already. I've toured internationally.
It doesn't, because you do get labelled with Britain's Got Talent immediately.
Forever. And I probably wouldn't win it. Artist wouldn't. I know Tokyo Myers won a couple of years ago, but he's doing covers of Ed Sheeran and fusing classical and pop. I wouldn't be doing that. So, I'd be the one where a dog wins, and I'd be, and then what's worse than that Britain's Got Talent contestant, Nicholas McCarthy, following me around for the rest of my life, where actually I'd had a career before that date. So,
because that's the issue, isn't it? I mean, this has come across a number of times where I've interviewed celebrities like yourselves who won't go on Britain's Got Talent because of this label that you get, or the X Factor that you get. Like, I think it was the other night, you had Susan Boyle doing America's Got Talent.
Yes, I saw that,
And she's always going to be known for Britain's Got Talent, like Paul Potts. He's trying to break away from it.
You can't break away from it.
No, it's very difficult.
And I think also as well, the viewing figures now, they say the viewing figures are still X, Y, and Z. They're not. They go by online figures as well as Facebook and social media things, which isn't the same, I think, as sat down like we used to back in the day. I don't know about you, but everyone used to watch Britain's Got Talent when it was series one.
Oh, absolutely. Noughties used to 20 million viewers. Britain's Got Talent used to get 20 million viewers.
It just doesn't. And I think, I'm not going to be doing the show I personally feel it's at the end of its life. And I think us as a TV consuming and TV loving nation, I feel we've kind of done with the talent shows. I feel like a lot of people don't know it, and then a lot of the winners, you see the winners a lot of the time, most people don't know who they are. It doesn't make you a household name anymore because not enough people watch it. And I think that's the difference to it.
Okay. What's the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you in concert?
Most embarrassing thing that's happened to me in concert, I was performing an outdoor concert in, where was I? I think I was in South Korea or something. Yeah, South Korea. I was in performing an outdoor concert and a bird, but like a, I want to say it was a heron, but it wasn't, but it looked like a heron, a big bird.
A big bird, a tall bird.
Flew on stage, and I could see it, and paraded around my piano. Obviously, the audience laughed. I was trying not to laugh, and at one stage, I looked at the audience laugh, and then it just flew off again, and that was quite embarrassing, because I didn't know what to do, because I was like, do I keep playing, do I not, do I stand up, you know.
I've just thought of a situation, which you've probably come across quite a lot, is, you know, when you go through customs, and you've only got one arm?
Yes.
And then you go up to the person in the box, and you say to them, oh, what are you here for? I'm working. Yeah. What do you do? I'm a pianist. Do they give you looks?
Well, they do. Often, though, I have an album in my hand luggage or something, which I can be like, this is me, or just Google me.
Oh, you like Ewan McGregor. He used to go around with a picture of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Oh, he used to go biking so he could get recognised by customs.
I love that. You know what the thing with customs is now? You know, you've got the fingerprint recognition things now, especially in the States. And obviously, they require two hands. Well, the amount of issue I've had where they've like, well, we need two fingerprints. I'm like, well, I don't. I can give you two fingers, but I can't give you, like, I can't give you two separate fingerprints, thumbprints. Yeah. I've only got one thumb, I'm sorry. And that's always, it makes me laugh that they haven't kind of thought that through.
No, I went through security at New York just a few weeks ago, and I had the scooter with me. Now, I can stand up, but I can't walk.
Yeah.
Okay, so I can transfer, I can stand, but moving my legs forward is quite difficult.
Yeah.
And I tried to explain this to customs. Now, they put their hands where no person should ever put their hands, except for your wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they did it in front of people, and I'm just like, hope I don't get aroused.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're like, you could have enjoyed this moment.
Now, I've never heard of this terminology. Now, with your hand as well, when you're playing one-handed, now, in later life, I would suspect you're going to get arthritis of some sort.
Well, I bloody hope not, but yes, I mean, there's a possibility, of course, or I could just injure my hand.
Do you ever get frozen fingers or anything?
No, I've got no issues with my hand. I get minor back pain sometimes if I've been on tour, like more in my right shoulder blade, nothing to do with my hand. But yes, it's something. I mean, my hand's insured, thankfully. And
I was going to say, how much is insured for?
Yeah, it's insured for quite a lot of money. It's not insured for $1 million, but it's insured for...
Yeah, Jello's bum was insured for like $1 million, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, someone did give me a quote to insure my hand for $1 million, and it was a lot more than my mortgage was a month. So I was like, no, you know what? I don't need it insured for that much money. But it is insured to make me comfortable if I did.
Yes.
If I did injure my hand, I'd be okay.
Is there a tune you want to play? That you haven't quite figured out how to play?
Well, there's lots of things that I just wouldn't attempt to play, to be honest, because I just wouldn't do it justice with one hand, and I'd rather enjoy my two-handed superstar pianist who I like to go and watch. I'd rather me go and watch them play, like for the Rachmaninoff's Second Piano Concerto, for instance. I think if I had two hands, it would suit my technique. I'd be quite good at that piece of music, but I would never arrange it for left hand alone. You know, it just wouldn't do it justice.
I am looking at your hand, it looks quite well groomed.
I keep my nails now.
I thought nails would actually help.
Otherwise they start clicking on the keys, so you've got to keep it's annoyingly in recordings, you can hear these nails clicking away.
Yeah, silly question, which I got asked to ask you.
Yeah.
Okay, how do you clap?
I clap on my leg. I clap like almost like
an
old royal would clap back in the 19th century something. Yeah, so I just clap with my... Or I actually clap with my little arm as well. So I'll use my hand to slap it against my little arm.
How many people come up to you and go to shake your hand the wrong way?
Oh, everybody. And even, I mean, very much, even if they've been at my concert, they've seen me play with my left hand for a whole hour and a half, and they'll still come up and try to shake my right hand, and I have to... And it's always that awkward thing. I give them my left hand, and again, it looks almost like I'm being quite poncy and quite royal, as if you may kiss the hand. And it isn't that. It's just I'm giving them my only available and only hand.
Yeah. Now, the next section, which does get a lot of talk to people talking about disability. Now, it's not supposed to be insulting, it's supposed to be a bit of a laugh.
It's very hard to insult me, Simon.
That's all right. So, it's things not to say to a disabled person.
Okay.
Now, this has had different reactions from different people. Mm-hmm. Everyone's taken it in the sense of humour it should be. But obviously, I'm guessing you come across these quite a lot. So these are based around you.
Yes.
Okay. So the first one is give me a hand.
Yeah. Do you need a hand with that? Yeah. And it really makes me laugh when people say that, because I couldn't give a flying hoot, but I can see they say it and then they instantly regret saying it and they get really awkward. And I'm a bit like, but yes, I mean, yes, have you got one spare, darling? I wouldn't mind any extra. But yeah, that always makes me laugh more because their reaction once they realise they've said it.
Yeah.
That really, okay. I enjoy that one a lot.
Have you ever been asked, why don't you just get a hook?
No, I haven't been asked that. I have been asked often about like Halloween. They're like, but why don't you just cover your arm in just blood?
And then have some
gory thing like that. So yeah, I haven't been asked it, but why don't I just have a hook?
Here's one which everyone gets. I get this. I feel so sorry for you.
Well, actually, I think I'm quite lucky.
Okay.
I haven't had that. And okay. I think maybe because they would know if they said it to me, I might flip out. I don't know. I haven't ever had that in an interview or anything, which is good.
Yes.
I think.
The other one is, I would die if I only had one arm.
Yeah, I have had that, which I suppose is almost in the same context as them feeling sorry for me. Yeah, I have had that in the past, more when I was younger, I suppose. I think since I've had the career that I've got, I think people were maybe a bit more sensitive in interviews, or they just know, you know, maybe not to say those things. But definitely before I kind of, you know, had the job that I have, I remember people saying that, and it's like, really? You really wouldn't, darling. You really wouldn't die if you had one hand. You'd just get on with it.
Yes, pretty much. You're so brave.
Yes, brave.
Yeah.
You're so brave. Yeah. That's a constant.
Yeah. You're an inspiration.
An inspiration, but I am to a lot of people, to be honest. I mean, what I used to get it beforehand, before my job, and that's when I didn't understand it, because I'd be like, well, I'm just a normal kid with who has one arm. Why am I inspirational? Yeah. Now, I suppose, I've gone and done something quite unusual and been successful at it. So I suppose in that, I know that I do inspire some people because they tell me. But yeah, it's a funny one.
What you don't know is I became disabled about 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
I got injured playing rugby.
Oh, right.
So okay. I lost all the sensation from the waist down.
Right.
So I'm very new to being disabled.
Yeah.
So you've had it all your life.
Yeah.
And when I got injured, I started researching lots of people, like the people of interest, so on and so forth. And then I come across you. And once I researched you, it was like, yeah, you are. You are an inspiration. You crack on with it. You've got a disability. You get on with it. And you say, you know, let's enjoy life. Let's do what I love. And, you know, it's all the world.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, it's just one of those things. And I, like I said to you, people used to say it to me prior to my job when I was a kid. And I remember. And I always used to think, like, I remember even asking my mum, why do people keep saying to me that I'm inspirated? Like, why I'm inspiration? And I wasn't doing anything. I was just playing out in the street with my friends. You know, I wasn't inspiring at all. Now, people do write to me and people do say, and I know I have inspired lots of people to go on and maybe pursue music when they felt they haven't been able to. And that's lovely. It's part of my job, which I love.
Someone ever said, I know a person who can solve that problem for you. I don't know how, but you know,
I don't know. I mean, that would be quite an intro. I mean, if someone said that to me, I'd say, oh, but please tell me more. Tell me more. Grow a hand out of a plant pot somewhere.
Now, this is a controversial one, okay? But I've been asked this, and what I found out as well while doing While Disabled is other celebrities have had this as well.
Okay.
Did you do something wrong in a previous life?
Have you really had that?
I've had that.
Has someone said that?
Yeah, absolutely.
God, I must have. Yeah. Maybe I give off this air of being slightly scary that people don't want to say these things because I haven't had that said to me.
You haven't had that one?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think I come across as scary, but maybe I do. Maybe I do. No, they haven't said that to me. I kind of want these people to say these things to me, really, because I think it would be quite amusing.
And I'm guessing you get this quite a lot because you're looking quite smart today. You're looking quite dapper because you're off for a private concert tonight. How do you dress yourself?
Yeah, I get things like, how do you eat? And it's like, well, I obviously manage very well.
You said you used to be fat, so you used to eat a lot.
Yeah, I used to be very fat, and, you know, I ate a bit too well back then. Yes, it was things like that. And like, the things I can't do, which I'm very open about, and I've been open about in the press in the past, is that I can't do shoelaces, for instance. Now, I know lots of one-handed people who can do shoelaces, but I will still wear lace shoes. I just make sure someone ties them for me, you know, and I've got no issue asking my partner or anyone to tie lace for me. So it's things like that, but yeah, it's and often kids, mate, it does make me laugh when kids, how do you brush your teeth? I'm like, I do have one functioning hand, one rather dexterous hand, actually. Yeah. And they obviously, with kids, they can't get it. They don't often get, you know, that you can just use a fork to eat. You don't need a knife and fork to eat. You can just use a fork. And that makes me laugh when they ask questions.
Tell you a funny story. Is went to an awards evening in Manchester about a month or so ago.
Yeah.
Didn't win. Came second.
Oh, no. Second is good.
Well, everyone came second.
Oh, okay.
Next time. It's a posh, you know, black tie. Yeah. Very nice. Everyone's suited and booted. And now I can't feel my feet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, we got into the car. I drove there, took the scooter in. And I get in there and I'm missing my shoe.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I've lost it somewhere.
And you wouldn't have felt it slip off, of course.
So I haven't got a clue where it is. So I'm doing a speech at the awards evening wearing one shoe. Get back to the hotel, park in the car park, and there's a shoe just in the car park space.
You're like, there's my shoe. At least you got it back.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it could be worse, Simon. You could have lost a good, decent shoe.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for taking part in World Saving.
Pleasure. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. We are going to put some videos online because we're going to get a video of you playing the piano.
Yes.
So it's going to be a 3 or 4 minute video. And yeah, thank you very much for
joining us. Brilliant. Thank you so much. It's been fun. Thanks a lot, Simon.
Thank you. Cheers.